Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A sea voyage of discovery turns into a voyage of extreme danger at one end of the earth on The Terror, AMC's new anthology saga. Executive producers Kate Kajanik and Sue Hugh, captains of this chronicle, starting Monday night, join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Something poetic comes to PBS 2 days later, Poetry in America. This new series covers the side of spoken word with the likes of Bono, Senator John McCain, and Knopf, to name a few. Spend some rhyme time with host and director Lisa New from Boston next half hour. And before we were Superman, there was Krypton, his home planet. Did you ever wonder what life was like on that globe pre-Man of Steel? Well, wonder starting tonight, no more, when Sci-Fi raised the curtain on Krypton. A special peek into the program with executive producer and showrunner Cameron Welsh begins 60 minutes from now. Also ahead, NBC's Indy 500 Takeover, the Get Down on ESPN's Get Up, Eco emerges in our Up segment, and our classic trivia question this week. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from a snowy New York on Blog Talk Radio and on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Thank you for joining us, whether you're in the snow or whether you're in the heat, this Wednesday afternoon right here on the program All About Television. Here in New York, 31 degrees at the top of the hour. We've already had 5-6 inches on the ground of the white stuff. It started pouring down with the flakes, big flakes you might add, at about 8 o'clock this morning. And we are expecting a lot more snow before things taper off late tonight, maybe early tomorrow morning at the latest. The latest on the storm, by the way, the nor'easter number 4 over the last few weeks, is right now, there's about 4 inches on the ground in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., Baltimore. As I mentioned, 5 to 6 here in New York, depending on the borough you're in. Boston does not have snow, we understand, at this hour, but it is supposed to get it late tonight into tomorrow, and then the storm, as it moves up, will hit Maine with about 4 inches of snow. The latest total, by the way, that everyone's expecting here in New York, anywhere from 10 to 12 inches, maybe more, depending on how the storm goes from here. And if you're in the vicinity of the storm, if you don't need to go out, do not go out. Airports been canceled, airlines canceling their flights all over the place. We understand bus and subway service may be reduced before the day is out. Amtrak on a reduced schedule. And so stay tuned to your local radio, TV stations, weather channel, et cetera, for all the latest. And, of course, keep us company here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll entertain you as much as we can, and we will all get through this together. Got a great 90 minutes in store for you. Wonderful guests coming away from all over the place. And we invite you on the program All About Television to be part of the action. All you have to do, raise your voice, pick up the phone, and use this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open for business for you, and you can find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and SimonApple04 by name. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Kate Kajanik and Sue Hugh will join us live from Ohio and New York, respectively, after these news notes. NBC is taking a victory lap this afternoon after making a deal to cover the Indianapolis 500 for the next 3 years, starting in 2019. The most iconic of all U.S. auto races has been an ABC attraction since 1965. First, as part of ABC's Wide World of Sports, and in recent decades as its own annual Memorial Day weekend special. Under this new arrangement, NBC will present the 500 and 8 other IndyCar circuit events per year, while offering additional IndyCar coverage on NBC Sports Network. The Indy 500 will have its final Indy presentation live May 27th. And a long-anticipated new morning program on ESPN goes on April 2nd. Get Up will occupy ESPN's weekday schedule from 7 to 10 a.m. local time, co-hosted by Mike Greenberg, Michelle Beadle, and Jalen Rose. The program will feature a mix of sports, news, and pop culture topics and generate and operate from a new studio space at the South Street Seaport in Lower Manhattan. In time, the studio will host other ESPN series from NBA Countdown to First Take and Around the Horn. And that is news notes for today. Our first two guests are two of the executive producers of AMC's new historical and supernatural saga, The Terror, which is overseen by the man behind Blade Runner and Alien, among other major epics. Ridley Scott. The program begins with a two-hour edition Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on AMC. Joining us live from Overland, Ohio, and here in New York, respectively, executive producers David Gojanet and Sue Hugh. David and Sue, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Thanks. Hi, Simon.
Pleasure to have you both on. David, we'll start with you. This is a show that's been 2 years in the making. How did it finally happen?
Well, it finally happened because somebody was brave enough to give it a green light. It's a massive show that crosses all kinds of genres in a crazy way and was going to be sort of big and a bit scary to make and expensive, and AMC finally stepped up to the plate and said, we'll do it.
And so this is a very unique situation because AMC is calling this an anthology drama. Why?
Well, the story of the Franklin Expedition, the story of what happened to the men in our show, it will end in our 10 episodes. And season 2 will pick up the baton and follow a different historical mystery.
And Sue, staying with you, how do you pick up the mysteries? How do you determine like what mysteries you will come? These are all based on historical situations that actually did happen.
Yeah, and that was one of the crucial DNA drawing points of something like this. To take something, the Franklin Expedition is one of Royal Naval history's greatest mysteries. So you take the DNA of a historical mystery and then you fuse it with some other genre piece, whether it's supernatural thriller or horror or Western. That was really exciting to us.
And David, the challenge of this is that you're blending a number of different genres here. You're blending adventure, you're blending a little supernatural, you're blending history coming alive, so that you are there kind of feel to it. There's a little bit of science. It's sort of like a potpourri of different genres all in one. So as you and Sue and Ridley were all planning this, what was like the big challenge for all of you to get this together?
Well, I think the biggest challenge respecting kind of how many genres the show touches on is how to use all of those genres against one another in a way that's exciting for an audience. And so the idea of taking the conventions of something like an adventure story, which is mostly about sort of earning victories and sort of crossing that with the horror genre, which is all about sort of impossible situations that, you know, where you have to do the thing you cannot do. It makes for interesting pacing. It makes for interesting character development because we might start a scene as an adventure scene and end the scene as a horror scene, and the change happens somewhere in the middle of the scene in an interesting way. So we were all really excited about that challenge in particular.
Mm-hmm. So this is, I understand, based on a bestseller and based on a historical incident. What about the book piqued your and David's interest and Ridley's interest in putting this program on?
Well, we based our season on Dan Simmons' book, The Terror, which is just, it's a phenomenal read, and we call it the gateway drug because not only did Dan take an extremely, extremely complicated story but distill it down to its most exciting and compassionate parts, but he incorporated the supernatural element to it and did it so, so amazingly well. We as writers know how difficult it is to do something like that. So when we read Dan's book, we were just floored and couldn't wait to bring it to the screen.
Mm-hmm. David, were there any other, points of focus that you could fall back on to figure how you put this together? Let's say like a classic saga to see, like Mutiny on the Bounty, or a more recent television series like Black Sails, the pirate drama that Starz did for 4 seasons, or other books or movies about historical legends or historical figures.
Well, it's funny that you asked that question because in the writers' room, Sue and I had a rule that people could not watch or read anything that was a naval narrative, because we wanted the show to feel like it had its own weird DNA, and so we didn't want sort of tropes of other kinds of maritime stories sort of bleeding into ours. And so we watched and read a lot of very interesting things that you would probably never guess we would use as references for the show. And hopefully that's created a kind of a weirdness to the show that won't remind you of any other nautical show or naval show you've seen.
Mm-hmm. You are hearing Danica Janik and Sue Yu. They are two of the executive producers behind The Terror. It's AMC's new original drama that premieres this Monday night with a two-hour episode, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. David joins us live from snowy Oberlin, Ohio. Sue joins me here in New York, where we have about 6 inches on the ground. We're expecting at least six more before all is said and done, probably overnight or early tomorrow morning. They're both with us live this half hour right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us on Blog Talk Radio or listening on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later in the program, we have our classic trivia question of the week still in play. We have an up segment on Echo, the interactive proving service that right now is not available on smart TV sets and devices. And Samsung, which was on our program this past Friday, is a co-owner. Will it go on smart TV sets and devices? We have the answer. We'll have that later in the program as well. Coming up on our program Friday, third of three episodes we're doing this week, we have another 90-minute show for you. First up, Shawna Mir-Pirro. She is the showrunner of The Secret Life of Kids, the brand-new Friday night series on the USA Network. Then, a big radio exclusive, the former Discovery Channel president, Jane Root. She has her own company, Utopia, and they're behind a very unique show coming your way Monday night on Nat Geographic. It's called One Strange Rock. It's all about Earth in a way you've never seen it before, the way astronauts see it. Will Smith is the narrator, and the famous filmmaker Darren Aronofsky is making his TV debut in this program. Jane Root from One Strange Rock, Internet Radio Exclusive on Friday. And finally, from the brand-new Discovery Science Channel simulcast, Invisible Killers, dealing with Ebola and other strange medical conditions, we'll have producer-director Steve Rebo. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sue, when you brought the writers together, what round orders did you and David and Ridley give them about how to fashion this novel, take what Dan wrote in his novel and make it a series?
Well, one of the things we told the writers' room, and we had a fantastic group of writers, is we told them to not worship horror. It's really funny. Dave talked about the movies that we saw, and we didn't see any horror films. So one of the mandates going in was, let's not initially think of this as a horror series because we know we're going to scare them, but let's first establish the characters and make sure that our audience falls in love with our characters as well. We're also very, very serious about not making our characters fall on the hero and villain spectrum. We wanted to do a really just complicated, beautiful story of people put in such strenuous, difficult situations. So we really pushed our writers, and they did a fantastic job of looking beyond those parameters that you might normally expect from television.
Mm-hmm. And David, to give into the plot a little bit, this is about the Royal Navy and one of their ships. They go into what they say is uncharted territory. I know it's a little bit of a cliche, but it sort of is in this case, where they're dealing with trying to discover a certain route, the Northwest Passage, and they end up going, of course, into a whole different direction.
Yes, so they had about 200-300 miles left of uncharted territory on their charts. So it was just about trying to get from the last point that had been charted out to the next point that had been charted again. And what they found was that 200-300 miles between them was some of the most treacherous, and that's how they got trapped, is they sailed into it thinking that it was going to be a fairly quick ending to their expedition, and they got stuck in the ice.
I noticed that the cast is very much ensemble. There is no big super name that is the captain of the ship or the admiral of the ship or whatever. Was that by design or was that by, this is the way it turned out in terms of the casting?
Well, they were super names to us.
Yeah.
Dave and I have been huge fans of Kieran and Tobias and Jared, and then for the rest of the cast, we were just so fortunate to find just tremendous actors who came from other British television or from the theater tradition. We didn't purposely try to find actors that weren't as well known in America. We really just truly cast the best actors for the role.
Mm-hmm. David, once you had your cast, where did you film this?
Well, we shot a lot of the first two-thirds, I would say, of the show on sound stages in Budapest in Hungary because we needed to use a technology that required digital build-outs from a green screen environment. So we built an actual ship that doubled for both ships and some ice fields and then surrounded those with green screens so that the VFX vendors could take over and build out the Arctic environments. And then once we reach a point in the story where there's a turn in the plot and some of the men end up on hard ground trying to get into mainland Canada to survive. We shot on a location in Croatia called Pag Island, which is this beautiful, terrifying kind of gravel wasteland that looks quite a lot like the part of the Arctic where this is set.
Mm-hmm. So this is the second series we have featured in recent weeks that was filmed in Hungary, X Company, which is a series now running on Ovation, from Mark Ellis and Stephanie Morgan, so the people behind the popular TV and American series Flashpoint, also shot their program. It was the World War II action drama in Hungary. What was it like doing the filming and the production there?
I mean, we couldn't have asked for better creative partners. Our Budapest crew were phenomenally talented. We knew that we needed large, large stages to recreate the Arctic environment. And the city of Budapest opened their arms to us. They have this wonderful renegade filmmaking spirit, so we felt lucky to be able to connect with them in that respect.
Mm-hmm. David, when you have a cast like this, a very ensemble, a lot of complicated characters, how quickly did the chemistry come together?
Well, we had, a kind of a no a-holes policy when we were casting and hiring all of our collaborators. And so we did a lot of calling around research to make sure that we weren't inviting anyone into the collaboration who was going to be territorial or a diva or overly, a complainer, because we knew the conditions would be quite difficult. And so what we ended up with was a boat full of lovely guys and a couple of fantastic actresses who came aboard. And we got along like gangbusters from the beginning. It really was a very, very easy, collaborative, open, respectful, supportive environment. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So working with Ridley Scott, what was it like? I mean, here's someone who is a master of epic films and to some extent epic television too. What was it like working with him? What kind of eye did he bring to the proceedings?
Well, I mean, at first we were, can you imagine, this is Ridley Scott. We were terrified initially because so many of his films were inspirations for us. And can I tell you, he was just the most lovely, lovely person, and he loves the show so much. For someone like Ridley Scott, who's, one of our greatest filmmakers around, to tell us that he had to binge watch episodes because he couldn't stop watching, it's the greatest praise we could have received. So we're going to take it.
Yeah. David, talk about how you picked directors for this. Was it a case of did you think first you wanted to have one person direct all the episodes, or did you go for multiple directors episode by episode, and how did it turn out? What kind of way did you go?
Well, we knew because of the how complicated the shoot was going to be that we were going to have to block shoot it, and we were going to need several different directors to do that because the prep for this was pretty intensive and post for this was pretty intensive. So to the degree you want your directors to have enough sort of time and mental energy to do all three of the phases well, you don't want to load them up with too many episodes. So we ended up going with three directors, each of whom shot three and in one case four episodes. And we found directors, we chose directors quite like we chose writers, in that we didn't want directors who were overly comfortable in the horror genre because we wanted our episodes to feel like they were bringing something new to the genre table. And usually the best way to do that is by bringing people who are also somewhat new to the genre. And so, we chose filmmakers that we thought had an interesting eye that was not exactly intuitively suited to horror, but we thought, the material, the performances, the design would all kind of shape a very strange, wonderful mix out of what they were bringing and what the show needed. And it really turned out beautifully.
Was that the same situation up and down the line with this production, Sue, where you have not just the directors and the writers, but your choice of composer, your choice of cinematographer, your choice of production design people, your choice of people on the set with graphics and so forth, that you wanted people that did not have a horror or science fiction background to do this saga so that they would bring something fresh?
Absolutely. I mean, something that Dave and I really responded to in terms of who we hire for this team is we really like when people told us they're petrified by the project. Not only because Dave and I are masochists, but also because in terms of approaching a world like this, where we wanted to really do something unique that hadn't been seen on television before, we really needed creative partners who understood that there was so much to excavate, and that we didn't want them to rely on other shows that have been filmed. We wanted them to be terrified, because out of that creative terror, just like the experience Dave and I went through, we knew we were going to unearth the best work.
Yeah. The Terror is AMC's brand new original drama that premieres this Monday night with a 2-hour episode, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time on AMC. And we've got two of the key executive producers behind it, Gabe Kajanek and Sue Hugh. Sue is with me here in New York, David in Oberlin, Ohio, where it's been snowing a little bit of late. And the both weather live this half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Appleton with you live from New York, where we have about 5-6 inches on the ground in various parts of our fair naked city. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Netflix is a brand new winner of a series that premiered this past Friday called On My Block. It's from Lauren Eagle, the woman who gave us Awkward on MTV. It's her newest series since then, and we'll have one of the other key executive producers and co-creators of the show, Jeremy Hackley, with us a week from Friday to wrap up March. That 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, March 30th, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. David, how did you and Sue come together as a production team?
Well, I have never done a television show before. I come from features. And so given this was going to be a pretty big show to run, we knew I was going to need a massive amount of help and a kind of guru to get me through it. And so we started interviewing people. And when Sue sat down, the things she wanted to talk about immediately were not horror or sci-fi or any of that. She wanted to talk about character. And I thought within 5 minutes, I knew Sue was the best match we could have possibly hoped for the show. And from there, we've just been kicking butt like the Wonder Twins.
And so what about your background?
I come from mostly television. So I've worked on a previous AMC show, The Killing, which was fantastic, which was an amazing experience. And I've also worked on Under the Dome. And I had a show at ABC a few years ago called The Whispers.
I remember The Killing very well. We had the person who did Wonder Woman, Patty Jenkins, was on our show, who did your wonderful first 2-hour episode, won an Emmy Award for it. I thought Venus Stewart and you and everybody involved there did a marvelous job. And Merle Enos gave a terrific performance that should have been up for an Emmy Award for that work. And I got to ask you what you thought was now, looking back, about doing The Killing.
I mean, it was a dream experience. That was my first television job. And just the amount of thought and rigor that Vina brought to the writer's room, she was such an inspiration for me. And a huge part of why I'm here is because I have her as a role model.
Say more about that.
I think she's this model example of how someone can be extremely on point about the story she wants to tell, but not treat everyone, she treats everyone with the utmost respect. What was great is from staff writer down to the highest level of producers, she really gave everyone a voice. She just had this all voices are equal, all hands on deck approach. And Dave and I very much came from approach this show as well. We really empowered everyone in our show from assistants on up to make this their show as well.
By the way, Vina now has the new series 7 Seconds with Regina King on Netflix. Got rave reviews and is still playing after a few weeks on. So far, so good. And that's also an anthology series, by the way. And we'll see if Netflix will renew it down the road for a second season. David, to pick up on that, all boys are equal situation. How diverse is the writing staff, the production team, and so forth? And how do you and Sue together bring that all voices are equal philosophy to what you do?
Well, I think primarily it starts not as an invitation as much as a sort of a set of responsibilities that are sort of doled out for all of the collaborators. In the writers' room, for instance, we knew we had a massive amount of research to do for the show, and we had 4 writers plus me and Sue, but we also had 3 more support staff, writers' room assistant and other assistants. And so we rather than divide all of this research out among 6 of us, we doled it out over 10 of us. And that, as a practical you know, as a practical concern, is, you know, it's a great solution for that. But what that means is once you empower people to take an intellectual piece of the action, you need to reward that, or you need to encourage that, or reap all the benefits you can from it by listening to what they have to say and what they think about what they've read and studied and prepared for you. And so it was really easy in the writer's room to get everyone on board, you know, to sit around the table, and everyone had a voice because everyone had some amount of expertise, and that carries over into production as well. You know, people did massive amounts of research and gave massive amounts of their time to getting inside of this world. So once people do that, why wouldn't you want to empower that? Why wouldn't you want to hear from them and to double and triple and quadruple check what you're doing?
So in closing, what do you hope viewers get from watching your show starting Monday night?
That's a very easy question. Dave and I want everyone to laugh, cry, and scream through this show. We want that whole full range of emotions to come out, because not only is this just a genre, not only is this a genre show, but it's so much more. It's so much about getting to know these really wonderful characters who've become, I mean, in some ways, like children for Dave and I. We just want the audience to feel all the love that we felt in the past 2.5 years making this show.
It all comes together this coming Monday night, 9 to 11 Eastern, with the opening 2-hour installment of The Terror, with more episodes coming 1 hour on Monday night as well. Once again, the opening installment of The Terror, overseen by Ridley Scott as well, Monday night on AMC, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local listing where AMC is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.amc.com. That's www.amc.com. David Zotanik and Sue Hugh, executive producers of The Terror, thank you both for joining us. It's a delight to have you both on this half hour. David, thank you for bearing with us. No, you too, Sue, as well. And good luck with the series. I hope it has a great, great, and long and wonderful run.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
David Kachemik and Sue Hugh joining us live from Overland, Ohio and New York, respectively, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We're our Carpet Trivia Question of the Week for you, but first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're a big Harry Potter fan, you can get those wonderful magical tales of life in Dumbledore, etc., in audio form, starting with the first book from J.K. Rowling. We're talking about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, narrated by the brilliant Jim Dale. If you've never heard Jim talk, he's one of the most amazing narrators and actors you could ever find anywhere in the globe. And you can have him anytime you like with a trial run of Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. Inspiration as well, too. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any devices, whoever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audiobook, like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, narrated by the great Jim Dale, or one of your choice. 1 month trial of service and great customer service because, of course, Audible is owned by Amazon.com. So hear for yourself why Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. Why they're a proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival coming to the Big Apple again this July. Audibletrial.com/televised. Great sound is waiting for you. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. It's still in play, and the question is this. Who was TV's first Maid Marian? That's Robin Hood's girlfriend. Who was TV's first Maid Marian? I'll give you a hint. It was part of the first ever and the longest-running Robin Hood series so far in TV history, back in the mid-1950s with Richard Greene playing that daring do that Errol Flynn, of course, had so memorably on the film screen. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if you first put the correct answer, you are in Stealing the Show. That's the new bestseller about women revolutionizing television by Joy Press, the former Village Voice TV critic and LA Times feature writer who was on this program last week. We've had about 200 replays of that interview. You can find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, other places as well, and the replays keep on coming. But you can get the book for yourself if you know the correct answer to this week's classic trivia question. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your full mailing address as well. If you just missed the question, don't worry. We'll replay it at the end or near the end of today's program, and also tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. But remember, in order to win, be in. And, of course, all the very best. When we come back, Echo responds to our Samsung interview last Friday. But first, we go live to Boston where they don't have the snow yet, and we will speak with the host and director of the new PBS series, Poetry America, that begins next Wednesday. Her name is Elisa New, and we'll hear from her, prose and otherwise, as we pause in the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your open. Let's talk about it. Check it out tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you find the best VTR 24/7 on YouTube and our show and other Blog Talk Radio programs on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Just go to iHeartRadio.com, put some Marvin Televised in the search bar, click, and you are there. Welcome back to more of our 90-minute Wednesday edition of the program All About Television. Simon F. I'm with you live from New York, where it is snowing heavy here in the Big Apple. 5 inches already on the ground. We're expecting another 5, 6, maybe more, before things run out of here overnight or early tomorrow morning at the latest. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead from Boston and elsewhere, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a ring from you. 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and it's SimonApple04 by name. Over the years, public broadcasting has presented all sorts of work in the arts, from great performances to the world of books on the long-running series Book Beat and other programs as well. But for the first time, I believe, ever, PBS is now doing a very special series about the world of poetry. And it's not just about people reading poetry, it's about showcasing poetry in all sorts of ways. The program is called Poetry in America, and it comes from WGBH in Boston, the folks behind such shows as The French Chef, to Masterpiece, to Mystery, to much, much more. And for many PBS stations, it will begin next Wednesday night, March 27th. Joining us live from WGBH in Boston is the host and director and Harvard University professor, Elisa New. Elisa, it's great to have you on the program.
Great to be here, Simon. Thank you so much.
Tell us about this series and how long it took to get on the air.
Well, it took about 4 years. I'm a professor, so there was a bit of a learning curve for me, and certainly it took time to persuade my partners at WGBH and funders to undertake the adventure of a series on poetry. But I would say that the actual production took about a year and a half.
And what finally got the project off the ground? At what point did WGBH and PBS say, yes, let's do this,
well,
whether we have the funding or not?
I can tell you why, and I think they really said yes from the beginning, and but whether an English professor was going to be able to figure out how to direct and produce a television series was a question for a while. The reason yes is that I believe that poetry lives most vibrantly as language that people share. And I came to WGBH with footage of that included my sharing with people they thought others would want to watch reading poetry, like Shaquille O'Neal and Joe Biden and Samantha Power and Regina Spektor, people you might not expect to be veteran readers of poetry, or even whom you might not expect, and this is the case with some of them, to have the courage to get on the air and read a poem when they're not actually veteran readers of poetry. And there, I think WGBH saw from the beginning that it would be exciting in some way to allow an inexperienced audience, an audience that, let's face it, most people are afraid of poetry, to have a proxy like Shaquille O'Neal or Joe Biden, not a professional, not an expert, not a poet, reading the poem along with me. I also included from the in the earliest vision of the series the element that we would bring on camera a distinguished American poet who would act as another interlocutor. And as the series developed, we began to see that we wanted, in many cases, to bring on a chorus as well. So, for instance, the episode that's about the poetry of Allen Ginsberg and that features Bono and the poet Juan Felipe Herrera also features a chorus of clergy people. Allen Ginsberg was a highly spiritual poet who believed in altered consciousness by any means, and the texture that we were able to get and the nuance of understanding we were able to get by bringing rabbis and Buddhist chanters and Hindus and Christians all together to think about the work of Allen Ginsberg eventually came to give, I think, each episode a texture and a complexity that I think WGBH could see from the beginning.
It sounds like that one of the things that you're very set on in terms of delivering poetry to a mass audience, as you just said, take the fear out, is to show that, hey, people of any stripe, whether a U.S. senator, whether a celebrity in sports, whether a celebrity in entertainment, whether somebody, an ordinary human being, can really enjoy poetry, that there's no class boundary, no boundary of color, no boundary of education, that people can enjoy the art.
Exactly. And enjoy the same poem in different ways. I'll give you an example. We have one episode on a poem called The Gray Heron, that it's about a shorebird. And the guests include E.O. Wilson, who's one of the great scientists and biologists of our time, and Robert Haas, a poet who was poet laureate of the United States and a very, very distinguished landscape photographer. As we watched the footage of these three all eminences in their field, we felt dazzled, but that there was a kind of wonder that they weren't maybe bringing. And I said, why don't we go to an Audubon summer camp and let's read this poem with kids. And what's fascinating when you level the playing field is, yes, you get something different from a child learning to make scientific observations while E.O. Wilson has been making those observations forever, but also the child in E.O. Wilson will often say the same thing. The child in our Harlem episode, the child in a Harlem playground will say some of the exact same things as President Bill Clinton. The poetry, the best poetry is shareable human language. It's language that wants to connect human beings to each other. And so, yes, the mission of this show is to demonstrate episode by episode that this ensemble pickup cast of readers, none of whom have prepared, none of whom has a script, who bring just their attention and their wits, can not only read a poem, but have the experience that Emily Dickinson described. She writes in a letter, I know it's a poem when it quite takes the top of my head off. And that, I think of poetry not as a difficult puzzle, but as, you know, and the experience of reading a poem is somewhere between drinking a cocktail and having a conversion. That is a poem can be a very transformative experience, and a poem happens to fit, lyric poetry happens to fit really well into a half an hour TV episode into 24 minutes. It's really the perfect amount of time to have experience of a poem.
When poetry has been presented on television, it can be very, very dramatic. Many years ago, a network no longer around called Black Family Channel did a series called Spoken, which was a spoken word series dealing with individual readings, many very poetic, some rap, by individual poets or individual performers. It was an amazingly shot show in out of Atlanta, ran two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Was a tremendous program. There was also Arts Entertainment Review, which was on A&E, produced by King World. And at the end of every program, just like Sunday morning ends their shows on CBS every Sunday morning with The Nature Spot, they would have a reading. Sometimes it would be poetry. The thing, though, that with this PBS series is that you go beyond just readings. In a particular half hour, you can do – it's a very flexible format where you not only have – different people from all walks of life doing the poems, but you have a conversation, you have performance, you have animation. You try to really showcase the poetry in all sorts of ways in the scope of an episode.
Yes, yes. Well, many poets, just to begin, many poets are influenced by other art forms. They think about other art forms, they draw on other art forms, and many of our guests, like Regina Spektor, for instance, or Bono, for instance, people who are singer-songwriters, think of what they're doing and, in fact, are correct in my view as poetry. So poetry only in the 20th century and only in the minds of those traumatized by it, poetry has never been an art form that's confined to the cold page. Poetry has lived in parades and pageants and spectacle for all of its long history. And so, what we try to do is bring the full-bodied quality that a poem can have. So we use. We try to use extraordinary archival imagery when appropriate. For instance, in the first episode, which is on Emily Dickinson's poem that begins, "I cannot dance upon my toes," and is about ballet. We use archival imagery from the 1850s when ballet was a very controversial art form in the United States because, you know, who wanted to go and look at a young woman's knees and ankles? It was considered disgraceful and scandalous. And so the imagery that it was published in periodicals and magazines from the 1840s is humorous as well as just gorgeous in a way that our imagery of ballet isn't. And so in each episode, we really look for either that historical milieu that we want to deliver you back into the cultural moment of the poem's genesis. We do that as well in our episode on Carl Sandburg's Skyscraper, where we try to return you to that moment in Chicago when the skyscraper as an architectural feat was being born. That's another example of the historical in our episode on Robert Pinsky's shirt. We take you into a very luxurious department store and then into sweatshops. Or into the history of the sweatshop. So you can think about this object on which the poem reflects, but think of it with your eyes and your ears and your historical memory, as well as you attend to the rhythm and sound of the poem itself. We have we read, yes. All of our guests read the poem. One hears it usually several times over the course of an episode, but we also use animation and kinetic typography, and we keep bringing the language before you in the graphics, so that by the end of the half hour, this poem has a grip on you. That anyway is my hope, that this poem has become yours, and maybe in some episodes you find yourself arguing with those who have advanced particular interpretations, or wondering why no one mentioned X or Y. How come this image that seems so salient to you wasn't a focus of discussion? Well, poems are like that. They exceed what we can say about them in any one sitting. And if I had my my wish come true, people would start to have poetry book groups and be talking about all we missed in a particular episode, or maybe even reading another poem by the poet to whom we've introduced them.
Poetry is the topic of conversation this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. Specifically, PBS's new series, Poetry America, comes from WGBH in Boston, and it premieres this coming Wednesday night over some PBS stations. Others will play it later in the week or on the weekend. So when you go to your local listings, check not only the PBS station in your area, like WGBH in Boston, that will play the program, but when they will play it, and whether they will also be replay somewhere down the road. We're talking with Elisa New. She is the host and director of the program. She's also a professor at Harvard University. The program, by the way, is funded in part by the Dalio Foundation, also the Poetry Foundation, and other individual funders as well. And Elisa joins us live from Beantown this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. It is not snowing yet there, but there is expectations of anywhere from like 4 to 8 inches before the nor'easter that we're getting currently in New York moves its way up the coast and out from New England by tomorrow afternoon sometime. Sorry, I've got with you live from New York. Right, have you with us on Tomorrow We Tell Lies, special midweek edition of Home About Television. Second of 3 episodes we're doing this week. Request your comment for our guest. Give us that call, 646-652-2906, and wax poetic with us, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for the next half hour, rescheduled from Monday's episode, we will have the executive producer and showrunner of Krypton, the new long-awaited sci-fi pre-Superman saga that premieres tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. That's coming up in our next half hour, live here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Let's go back over that first episode coming up next Wednesday. If I Cannot Dance, Upon My Toes, the poet by Emily Dickinson. And it's very interesting because when I originally saw that this was going to be opening episode, I thought, you got to have a lot of dancers in here, or at least people with the arts. You do have Cynthia Nixon, who just announced her campaign to run for governor of this fair state, New York. You got Yo-Yo Ma. I thought you have Misty Copeland. I really thought, like, when I was at that poll, like, Misty Copeland. That would be a perfect choice. And you have a very good choice, too, Dancer Cry for Jill Johnson. And you have another poet as well, Marie Howe. I'm curious how you decided to match these people with this particular poem.
Well, Cynthia Nixon was easy, and, of course, a dream come true, because Cynthia Nixon had, when we began working on this episode, she had just finished playing Emily Dickinson in the extraordinary Terrence Davies film called A Quiet Passion. And her depiction, her performance as Dickinson, just, it was really just dazzling and so moving. And so she was obviously the person I wanted to get. Marie Howe is an extraordinary, distinguished poet, and I didn't know her, but I reached out to her. And Yo-Yo Ma, I admit, is a friend. One of the nice things about being a Harvard professor, there are many nice things, but it's a pretty rich community hanging out here in Cambridge. And Yo-Yo does live he travels much of the year, but he lives around here. And on one of his trips, on one of his stops in Boston a few years ago, I said, Yo-Yo, I I have this poem, and it's ostensibly about dance, but it's actually about all art. It's about what it is that connects the dancer to the poet, to the musician, to the opera singer, and so on. And you are, and you're the man, I want to be part of that. And that process of coming up with a dream list, and sometimes not being able to make it work, was, you know, happened for each episode of the series, where we would say, wouldn't it be amazing if we could get X, and then we would begin working our networks and trying to close those 6 degrees of separation, so that we could. But the reflections that we get, and Jill Johnson, who is an extraordinary dancer and a Harvard choreographer, and who, by the way, in her in an uncanny way, like Cynthia, looks a little bit like Emily Dickinson, agreed not just to dance for us, but to choreograph a dance, and one that has some awkwardness as well as great beauty, as the poem has some awkwardness as well as great beauty. So that episode is typical.
Yeah. In the other episodes that follow, was there a particular person that you were particularly pleased to have on, or was there a person that you had to do a lot of conversation about to enroll them in being on the program because they might have had a fear of poetry, or as you were mentioning with Yo-Yo Ma, I'm not really for this because I don't understand the connection I might have with this poem.
Well, you've asked some people. There are people who just think, I don't care that much about poetry, and I'm not curious about poetry, and I'm not sure I want to have an unscripted experience thinking about poetry. And there were some of those. Most people we asked were really game, and some because they had a poem they cared about deeply and wanted to share. That was the case with Bono, who wanted to read particular Allen Ginsberg poems with me that were meaningful to him, and I have to say that I tried to talk him out of the poems we chose, and I was wrong and he was right. The ones that he wanted us to talk about are poems you'll even if you've watched 10 Allen Ginsberg films, you probably never will have seen these poems explored or even if you've read books, you probably will never have seen these poems explored in such depth. And they really do go to the heart of what Allen Ginsberg was doing. And on the other hand, there were people who said, you know, I don't really read a lot of poetry. And I said, you are an expert at the fast break, or you understand, that would be Shaquille O'Neal or Shane Battier or Pau Gasol, or as I said to Frank Gehry, you understand architecture, and please come and read, pool your knowledge of architecture with my knowledge of poetry, and I bet you that your expertise will quicken and really take flame in just a few minutes, and that's what happened. So for me the process was it was really different for every show, and I love the way the guests, some of them brought deep attachment to particular poems, others brought a body of knowledge about the subject at hand, the fashion designers, for instance, who the wonderful, wonderful fashion designers and shoe designer who participated on Shirt, none of them had read much poetry before, but they understood craft, and they and we met rapidly in our discussions. We found that we clicked really, really quickly, because anyone who's designed a shirt understands in a way how you design a poem. There are affinities that I hope this series will put on display, and there's a kind of community building that I think is the original function of poetry that I hope this series will accomplish.
Incidentally, you should know that a number of the segments are taped on location. That segment with Robert Pinsky's poet shirt was taped in part at New York Fashion Week. There's a segment on Langston Hughes, the man who wrote the great poem that inspired Raising the Sun, Dream Deferred. It's a poem called Harlem that involves Herbie Hancock, the pianist and composer, the Harlem Children's Zone, interpreting that poem. Also, I mentioned Nas earlier. He's got an episode where he had not himself but other rappers doing with his own work called New York State of Mind. And there's also the clothing segment, which will be running in May, is going to deal with the famous Statue of Liberty poem from Emma Lazarus, The New Colossus, which also includes people like the singer-songwriter Regina Spektor, and also people from the American Federation of Teachers involved with that. We're running out of time, and I love this conversation. So let's try to wax it poetic for one last question, and that is, if you get a second season, what poet or poem or figure would you like to have, Heart of Hearts, for season two?
We've already done some filming, and we've done some filming that included John Lithgow and Kate Burton and Katie Couric and Kay Redfield Jamison. We're hoping to do a poem by Elizabeth Bishop and a poem by Frank O'Hara, the great poet of the other great poet of the 19th century is Whitman. So I think some of those are on our list for next season.
The program is Poetry in America, and you can start waxing poetic about it next Wednesday night over many PBS stations. Check your local zone for the PBS station in your area about when they play it. Some will play it on Wednesday, some will play it later in the week, others will play it during the weekend. So you got to watch those listings very carefully to find out the station and the time period. Also, some PBS stations, as their practice, will replay the program over the weekend as well. If you want more details about the program online... I'm sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
It will also stream on poetryinamerica.org.
So we want to give you three places, by the way, to find out about where the program is playing and find more information about the series. There's pbs.org, there's WGBH's own website, which is wgbh.org, and poetryinamerica.org. So once again, for more details online, pbs.org, WGBH.org, the participating station in the program, and poetryinamerica.org. And again, the program premieres on many PBS stations next Wednesday night, March 28th, various time periods. Alisa New, the host and director of the program, also professor at Harvard University, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck with the series. Hopefully this is the beginning of a great, great run, and one that will give poetry a heightened attention all over the country and even all around the world, too.
Thank you so much.
It's a magnificent art form.
Delightful talking to you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Lisa. Take care. All the greatest. And hang in with the snow when it comes your way.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Lisa New from Poetry America, joining us live from WGBH-TV in Boston. Now, coming for Up as an update, where we follow up on guests and topics we have had previously on this program. Back on Friday, we had an exclusive interview with Scott Cohen. He is one of the senior managers of Samsung Electronics America. We talked about the new Samsung Smart TV sets. They're now available at places all over the country. And we asked about a project that Samsung, along with MGM, are investors in called Echo, E-K-O. It used to be called Interlude. And Echo is an interactive programming project currently available on smartphones and on PCs. We asked whether or not Echo was finally going to get on smart TV sets, as well as devices like Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Scott could not say. He declined to answer the question. Anyway, we later on were able to contact Echo by Facebook when we saw or Twitter, when they had a thing on Twitter, one of a tweet. But we were able to get contact with them, and guess what? They contacted us yesterday with two responses. Yes, they are working on a smart TV set, smart TV device version of Echo. And secondly, we're going to try to get an Echo person on the program in the near future. So once again, yes, Echo is working on a smart TV set, smart TV device version of their project, where you can, and of course, watching a TV program there, you can, at various points in the program, change the direction of the show in various ways. In the case of smart TV set device, you can do it with your remote control or do it with voice commands through artificial intelligence like Alexa, Google Assistant, or in the case of Samsung sets, their new artificial intelligence process known as Bixby. And secondly, they are going to try to get an Echo person on the air with us in the near future. Incidentally, last week, Echo premiered its latest original program. It's from MGM, and it's a new interactive version of their famous movie with Matthew Broderick and Ally Sheedy, War Games. You know the one with, shall we play a game? Yes, that one. So we'll see what happens down the road, and we'll keep you posted when Echo will come on. I hope it will be in the very, very near future. When we come back, we will be joined live by someone who is very excited about a program coming up on Sci-Fi at 10 o'clock tonight. The program is Krypton, and he's the executive producer and showrunner. His name is Cameron Welch, and he'll join us live after we pause after the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Death Freaka Show. It's the Death Fresh Show, excuse me. That's the Death Fresh Show. Check out the latest in rap and hip-hop tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the Death Fresh Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best BTR always available 24/7 at YouTube.com. And don't forget that our program is available on iTunes, Apple TV's iTunes Podcast app, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network round the clock. So check us out. And when it comes to iHeartRadio, go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tamabe Televised in the search bar, click your in, or go to the top of the screen, click on Categories, then click Entertainment, and you will catch our program. Welcome back to the Tamabe Televised, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Simon Appleman with you live from New York, where it is currently snowing. We're in the midst of the nor'easter. 6 inches on the ground here in New York, 31 degrees at the top of the hour. We are expecting at least another 4 to 6 inches, at least, here in New York before this storm winds its way up New England and out of here, hopefully by overnight tonight. But I've heard some forecasts that it may not be until tomorrow morning, when the snow finally stops. If you're dealing with the snow, whether with us here in the Big Apple or in Connecticut or Long Island or down in Philadelphia, in D.C. and Baltimore, if you don't need to go out, don't go out. Use mass transit if you can. I know there's some mass transit systems out there. Amtrak's on a reduced schedule. Airports closed. Flights canceled. So stay with us here at Blog Talk Radio. We'll keep you company, and we will all get through this together. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. We invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a ring from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number of it anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. We got our chat room open, too. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Tonight at 10 o'clock, Sci-Fi is presenting one of the most anticipated shows, not only on their network, but on other cable or broadcast or streaming channels as well. It is Krypton, the pre-Superman saga of both the DC and Warner Brothers. And it's put together by David Goyer, whose credits include some of the best superhero films in recent years, along with the popular Star series of recent years, Da Vinci Demons, and my next guest, who is the executive producer and showrunner. And I believe he's joining us live from Los Angeles. It's a pleasure to welcome this program for the first time, Cameron Welch. Cameron, great to have you aboard.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
Well, what's it like for you a few hours away from finally seeing your creation on the air?
It's really exciting, actually. We've been all working on it for such a long time, but we've been in our own kind of bubble, shielded from the rest of the public, way away in Belfast, shooting the show. So we're just very excited, I think, all of us as a group to be able to share it with the rest of the world.
Obviously, you're tackling a portion of one of the greatest comic book action-adventure sagas ever created. Superman, because this is all about the planet that Superman was born on before he became the Man of Steel, and you could go any which way with this series that you wanted. When you and David got together, did you have an idea, a firm grasp about what you wanted to do, or was it a situation where by osmosis things finally came about and you finally got the vision that you wanted?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I think there was some kind of major goals that we had in mind story-wise that we sort of wanted to achieve. But I think the rest of it, the way we work is to try and keep an open mind to all the ideas that are brought forward by everybody else working on the show, and just to try and work firstly from the point of view of character, really build up these characters and make them real, make them fully dimensionalized, and then after that they tend to help us steer the story in a more organic way. So we had some strong ideas to start with, but I think the rest of it came from building out the world, building out the characters, and then letting them kind of lead from there.
How long did it take to build out that world, to build out that grand master plan of the series?
A really long time. I mean, there's so much involved in that, really, in the world building of it all. There's the, you know, the conceptualizing stage of it, both, you know, in terms of the drama, but also from a production point of view, the design of it, the aesthetic. We work with concept artists from, you know, all around the world, pulling together images and inspirations from all over the place, just to try, and every kind of detail in the show, you sort of realize is everything's really well considered and thought out and planned. So every costume, every prop, every piece of set decoration is all custom made. It's all bespoke. It's all we can't really buy, you know, costume or props from the rack. Everything, because this is a, you know, an alien world unlike any we've seen before. So everything has to be made in house. So the more you make, the longer the design lead-in time you require. So it's taken quite a while to do all that world building, but it's really the fun part of it as well.
How much did you and David draw upon the comic books, Superman, Action Comics, and so on and so forth, particularly recent vintage, or the graphic novels of recent years, to come up with the look of the show or the characterization of the various actors?
Yeah, I think we took our main inspiration from the comics, but there wasn't necessarily one book or one title in particular that served as the main source of inspiration. We sort of took from everything, and not really just the comics, but also in other portrayals in film and television. But I guess if there was one book that we would lean on the most, it was John Byrne's World of Krypton. That I guess from the point of view of some of the themes that it was tackling, and in some ways, yeah, the characterization, that was probably the one that we drew on the most.
Mm-hmm. Krypton is the long-awaited pre-Superman series that premieres tonight on Sci-Fi, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And we have got the executive producer and showrunner of the series, Cameron Welch. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Tom and I have with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard, whether you're in the rain or whether you're in the warmth. We're happy you're with us this Wednesday afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Cameron, give us a call and use this number, 646-652-2906, or get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our third of three programs this week comes your way, another 90-minute edition this Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We'll start off with the showrunner of the new USA Network series, The Secret Life of Kids, which is on Friday night, premiered this past Friday, Sean Amnere-Pirro. Also, We will focus on a new series on National Geographic. I've seen a preview of it, and you will not want to miss it. It's called One Strange Rock, narrated by Will Smith. It also marks the TV debut of the famous filmmaker Darren Aronofsky. We've got one of the other key people involved, the former Discovery Channel U.S. President Jane Root. And finally, from the brand new Discovery Science Channel simulcast special, Invisible Killers, coming up a week from Friday, we've got producer-director Steve Rebo. It's all coming up this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. For those who don't know, there's a full circle here, because in the famous Superman saga, Superman comes to Earth because his planet, Krypton, is about to be destroyed. As a baby, he then, by his father, gets that wonderful rocket flight to Earth before the planet blows up. Here in this case, we have your main character, who is called Segel, who, by the way, is played by another Cameron, actor Cameron Cuff, and he is dealing with the possibility of Krypton, guess what, being destroyed. Do you find the irony in that, that sort of starts off in a little bit of a full circle way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the destruction of Krypton is one of those known in the DC mythology. It's something that, you know, people who are aware of Superman and of that story, even in passing, generally have a pretty, you know, a pretty good understanding of that. So it felt like, you know, we had to address it in story. We wanted to make this show not feel completely like a prequel or an origin story, if you like. We're aware of that as a challenge, I guess, for the show, that we don't want to create a sense that we're just spinning our wheels or treading water until we get, and that there's like a sense of inevitability about the conclusion of this series. So we wanted to address that, and we wanted to address it by sort of reassuring our audience that this is an unknown story, that this is going in directions that you can't anticipate. And so we introduce a time travel element to the story that sort of involves Krypton's destruction and the changing of history. So that very, very quickly, the timeline that we're on has now altered.
And that time traveler is Adam Strange. If you know your DC comics, he's one of the most played heroes in the history of comic books, not just DC, but comic books in general. And some people, I'm sure, have been like, when is Adam Strange getting his own series? You know, and he finally does get this through Krypton. It's played by Sean Seacole. And you also have one of the greatest villains in the history of comic books, namely Brainiac.
Yeah, I mean, we've got great characters from the DC world, and they're sort of showing up in unusual and unexpected ways, and they're not necessarily behaving in the way we would normally perhaps expect them to. But there's always a very good reason for that in our series. We're really excited about Adam Strange. I think he, like you were saying a moment ago, with the Superman story that we're familiar with, you know, Superman leaves Krypton and arrives on Earth. Well, in our story, Adam, it's the inverse of that happens with Adam Strange, I guess, where he comes from Earth and arrives on Krypton, and so he's like he becomes like a point of view character for us as an audience. He's like our proxy. And he's, you know, we're experiencing this alien world and this new culture through his eyes. So he provides the familiarity in an otherwise alien world. And then with Brainiac, I think, you know, we were just really excited about the opportunity to really bring this character to the screen. I don't know that we've seen Brainiac really in live action before. And so we were very, very excited about doing that, and we have a great actor in Blake Crichton who plays Brainiac, and he does a great job, and we're really pleased with the team that we partnered with, Legacy, who did an extraordinary job with all the prosthetics and the suit. So yeah, we're happy to bring Brainiac to screen.
Where do you see him, by the way, tonight? That makeup, I've seen some of the promos Sci-Fi has run the last few days, and his makeup is unbelievable. I mean, you are going to see, it's very intense.
Yeah, it really is. It's like 5 hours in the chair for Blake to get, you know, Brainiac ready. I mean, the suit that he wears, it's all functional, like its own battery pack in there. It powers up different things within it. It's a really impressive look that we've got for Brainiac.
For Cameron, you, the showrunner, what's it like working with Cameron, the actor, and your main actor at that?
It's incredible. He's just this massive resource to draw from. He knows the comic book world and particularly the DC world and Superman better than anyone that I know. He's a fan first and foremost. And so he comes at it from that angle, but he's also we're all really grateful and excited about what he brings to us by being a fan and all the knowledge that has. But it shouldn't take away from the fact that he's actually an extraordinary actor as well, and he brings so much to SEG from a pure craft point of view. So, I mean, I kind of see him as a partner of sorts on this. We talk constantly about what we're doing with the show, about story, not just what his character's doing, but a more holistic kind of look at the series. He's right in there as a key creative contributor at every stage.
At the beginning of today's episode, we had the two executive producers responsible for The Terror with Ridley Scott, which is premiering next Monday night on AMC. And it was very clear from that conversation that what those producers wanted was to have writers and directors that were not familiar with the genres they were dealing with. Supernatural, historical, saga on the sea, on ships, because they wanted a fresh perspective to come through. Was that the same modus operandi you had here with Krypton, where you wanted, you and David wanted writers and directors who may not have been into the action-adventure or the comic book genre to, again, bring out a more fresh perspective on what you want?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. We, in putting together this writer's room, I was, very focused on trying to find, firstly, a very diverse group of writers. I wanted, us to have a lot of diversity in gender and in ethnicity, age, everything really, so we could get as many different perspectives as possible. And, there are a few people with very good encyclopedic like knowledge of comic books and the mythology, but not too many. The rest are, we look for people who, who had experience as writers and interests as people and writers in some of the kind of social issues that we were looking to talk about in the show. We see, I think, this show and science fiction generally as being an opportunity to make some kind of social commentary. So we were looking for like-minded people who were looking to speak on some of the things that were happening in the world today and had good knowledge of that. And then we were able to kind of channel that through the through the lens of Krypton, through that science fiction lens.
Yeah. Since you brought up, Cameron, the best comic books, the best graphic novels, the best science fiction on television, where you go back to the Twilight Zone, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, etc., deal to some length or some degree with social issues. Was there a particular social issue that you wanted Krypton to cover?
There were a lot, really, I think. And we just wanted to make sure we got the balance right so that it didn't become too heavy. We wanted to make sure that it was still first and foremost an entertaining science fiction show, but we just didn't want to make it wholly that without any sort of substance to it. We wanted to make sure that there was a bit more depth to it than just that. So I think we just looked around at what was happening in the world and drew from that, sometimes consciously and other times just because it was things that are in the zeitgeist that are ever present. We find ourselves just naturally sort of talking, telling stories about that. I think in episode three, you'll see an episode that that deals with, in some ways, with police brutality and, you know, the over-militarization of the police force. So, well, I guess we're looking at social issues that, that affect the mostly the disenfranchised people of the world.
Cameron Welsh is the executive producer and showrunner of Krypton. It's Sci-Fi's newest original drama, and you can see it tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific time on that network. Cameron joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. With us for a few more minutes, so if you have a question or a comment, get it in at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And next Friday, we're going to wrap up our month of March with one of the co-creators of the newest acclaimed series on Netflix that premiered this past Friday called On My Block. It's Mark Egluck, one of the people who made Awkward so very popular and so very critically acclaimed on MTV some time back. Jeremy Hack will join us, the co-creator of On My Block on Netflix, next Friday, March 30th, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Have you already heard from fans of the series or popular fans saying, are we going to hear more about things like kryptonite or more about some of the other things associated with the planet? Is that going to be touched upon at some point in this season?
Yeah, for sure. There's, I mean, the interesting thing about the show is there's, you know, while we're tackling one of the most recognizable brands and you know, characters in all of superhero, in all of, you know, kind of the comic world mythology, the planet itself, Krypton, there's not that much known about it, which gives us a lot of freedom. It's an opportunity to kind of explore a lot of, you know, it gives us a bit of an open book, really. But having said that, there are certain things that are known, that are part of the canon, that I think audiences will want to see. So, yeah, we have been working at getting those in there. But again, we just want to do it in a way that's all organic. It's not just stacking the show full of Easter eggs. It's not just about kind of, you know, lazy fan service, I guess. We're trying to do it in a way that, you know, we don't want to just kind of throw that stuff in there just to, you know, without any, everything has to be kind of considered and everything needs to sort of earn its place.
What's it been like to produce the show in Ireland? I know that that country in recent years has done very well in terms of coming up with animation. We've seen a number of Disney Channel shows, Nickelodeon shows, Cartoon Network shows being produced in Ireland, and the animation there is really remarkable, very well done. But what about a live-action show like Krypton? This has got to be one of the biggest projects that country's production facilities have had in a long time.
Well, there's where we are in Northern Ireland, there's also another little show that's being shot there you might have heard of, Game of Thrones. They make that one there as well. So they've got some experience in dealing with, you know, genre, big kind of genre TV. That's obviously, I think, in its last season now. And we share a lot of crew with Game of Thrones. We have people that have maybe worked on some of their earlier seasons came across to work with us. And I think when we wrapped shooting for this season, a few people went back, but the Northern Ireland is really an incredible place to shoot. Belfast is it's a good city. It's great for it's a great city, and it's close. Our cast is all UK based, mostly out of London, so it made it easy for cast to come and go, to get back to London for weekends, things like that. We work what's called French hours over in the UK, so 10-hour days, which is makes for a better work-life balance for a lot of cast and crew. And as I say, they're really, that crew is world class. After years and years of doing Game of Thrones, you know, really, if not the biggest show on TV, then I mean close enough to it. They're an exceptionally skillful and talented group and a really deep pool of talent there in both cast and crew.
Yeah. And I have a hunch if HBO goes forward with those Game of Thrones spinoffs, that country is going to get a lot more exciting production thing. By the way, Ian McInerney from Game of Thrones, one of the actors in the cast of Krypton. What message do you have for whether longtime DC fans, longtime Superman fans, or people just started about what you hope the series will accomplish, particularly for them?
Well, I hope that it expands upon the mythology that they already know. I hope they feel that it honors what's come before, but also carves its own place within the mythology. We always approach it as in a way that we didn't want to discard anything that's come before and just run right over the top of it. We wanted to try and this show comes really from, you know, from everything that's come before. It has been its inspiration, so we want to acknowledge that, but we also wanted to carve out our own kind of path and offer something new. So that's one of the things that we've tried to find the right balance there of introducing new elements, but expanding and deepening the mythology for those who are already familiar with it.
The Curtain Rises on Krypton tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Sci-Fi. Check the release of where that network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details online, you're at www.sci-fi.com. It's www.syfy.com. Krypton from DC Comics and Warner Brothers tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Cameron Welsh, executive producer and showrunner of the series, thank you very much for joining us a few hours before the premiere. We really appreciate it. Congratulations on getting the series off the ground with you, David, your fellow Cameron actor, and everybody involved, cast and crew. Let's hope this is the beginning of a wonderful and fantastic run.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
Same here, Cameron. All the greatest. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Cameron Welsh from Krypton, joining us live from Los Angeles. And before we go, one more time with our classic trivia question this week. Who was TV's first maid Marion? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. First correct answer, we'll get doing the show, How Women Revolutionized Intelligence, by our guest from last week, Joy Press. If you missed the question, we will post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on my Twitter handle, UBC Simon, TWBT. Thank you to all of our guests for a marvelous 90 minutes, whether they were in the snow or not. And thank all of you for listening. We hope you hang in there, whether you're in the snow, along the Northeast Corridor, or in the heat, or in between. Coming up on Friday's episode, Shona Mirpiro from The Secret Life of Kids on USA Network, Jane Root from the new Nat Geo series, One Strange Rock, and from the Discovery Science Channel, Thumbcast special coming up next Friday, Invisible Killers, producer director Steve Rebo. Another 90 minutes in store for you to wrap up the week. Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Keep it on today's program. Want to catch up episodes missed? Go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on the iRadio Podcast Network, iTunes, and Apple TV's iTunes Podcast app. Again, if you want to catch up on today's program, and let me know what you think of it. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. We love hearing what you have to say because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those of Block Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Kenneth Reeves is our production associate, Andy Till, Block Talk Radio general manager, Jay Sauber, executive content producer, and the co-founders of BTR, Alan Levy, and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we talk about is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company, proud development partner of the New York Television Festival. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Please, if you're in the snow belt, take care. Stay at home. If you don't need to travel, don't. And stay in touch with Blog Talk Radio. We'll keep you company. We are back on a Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Be safe and great out there, no matter where the weather is for you. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.